Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 61, verses 26 through 40. Using an actual book. I forgot my e-reader this morning. I had to actually pull a real live book out. All right. You got the verse, kids? You ready? All right. Rusty, ready? On the board. Tasmin habutaye rajan Rukmini Rama Keshavo Purambo jakatam gajmo Samba prajum nakadaya Tasmin habuddaya rajan Rukmini Rama Keshava Purambo jakatam gajagmo Samba prajum nakadaya. Easy verse, please chant. Ladies. I know the students divide themselves up according to their own things, so we'll just say students, and you can chant according to your teacher's discretion. Students?
Yeah.
translation. On the joyous occasion of that marriage, O King, Queen Rukmini, Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna, and several of the Lord's sons, headed by Samba and Pradyumna, went to the city of Bhojakata. Please repeat. On the joyous occasion of that marriage, O King, Queen Rukmini, Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna, and several of the Lord's sons, headed by Samba and Pradyumna, went to the city of Bhojakata. I'm just going to read the rest of these verses that I'm responsible for today, since there's no purport or just one line purport in it. Text 27, 28. After the wedding, a group of arrogant kings headed by the king of Kalinga told Rukmi, "You should defeat Balaram at dice. He's not expert at dice, O king, but still he's quite addicted to it." Thus advised, Rukmi challenged Balaram and began a gambling match with him. Text 29. In that match, Lord Balaram first accepted a wager of 100 coins, then 1,000 coins, then 10,000. Rukmi won the first round, and the king of Kalinga laughed loudly at Lord Balaram, showing his teeth. Lord Balaram could not tolerate this. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the wagers consisted of gold coins. Lord Balaram inwardly became quite angry when he saw the gross offense of the king of Kalinga. Translation. Text 30. Next, Rukmi accepted a bet of 100,000 coins, which Balaram won. But Rukmi tried to cheat, declaring, "I am the winner." Translation. Text 31. Shaking with anger like the ocean on a full moon day, handsome Lord Balaram, his natural reddish eyes even redder in his fury, accepted a wager of 100 million gold coins. Text 32. Lord Balaram fairly won this wager also, but Rukmi again resorted to cheating and declared, "I have won. Let the witnesses here say what they saw." Purport. Rukmi undoubtedly had his friends in mind when he called for witnesses to speak, but even as his witnesses prepared to aid their cheating friend, a wonderful event took place as described in the next verse. Text 33. Just then a voice from the sky declared, "Balaram has fairly won this wager. Rukmi is surely lying." Text 34. Urged on by the wicked kings, Rukmi ignored the divine voice. In fact, destiny itself was urging Rukmi on, and thus he ridiculed Lord Balaram as follows. Text 35. Rukmi said, "You cowherds who wander about the forest know nothing about dice. Playing dice and sporting with arrows is for kings, not the likes of you." Text 36. Thus insulted by Rukmi and ridiculed by the kings, Lord Balaram was provoked to anger. In the midst of the auspicious wedding assembly, he raised his club and attacked and struck Rukmi dead. Text 37. What do they call that? Spoiler alert. The king of Kalinga, who laughed at Lord Balaram and showed his teeth, tried to run away, but the furious Lord Balaram quickly seized him on his 10th step and knocked out all of his teeth. Text 38. I guess he had to see Gaurashakti after this. Text 38. Tormented by Lord Balaram's club, the other kings fled in fear, their arms, thighs, and heads broken, and their bodies drenched in blood. Text 39. When his brother-in-law Rukmi was slain, Lord Krishna neither applauded nor protested, O king, for he feared jeopardizing his affectionate ties with either Rukmini or Balaram. And text 40. Then the descendants of Dasahara, headed by Lord Balaram, seated Aniruddha and his bride on a fine chariot and set off from Bhojakata for Dwarka. Having taken shelter of Lord Madhusudana, they fulfilled all their purposes. Even though Rukmini was very dear to all the Dasaharas, her brother Rukmi had constantly opposed and insulted Krishna since Rukmini's wedding. Thus, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, the associates of Lord Krishna could hardly lament Rukmi's sudden demise. Thus, in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 61st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled, "Lord Balaram Slays Rukmi," Such a wonderful subject matter for the kiddies to hear today. Beating people with clubs. Not unlike much of what we see them do at the Sunday feast when they're running around with their sticks. So, Om Agyana Tamaranda Syajan Anjanasha Lakaya Chaksu Unnaritam Minatasmai Sri Guru Vyamaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pandum Lam Jayate Guru Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Minatai Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasi Gaur Bhakti Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare A bunch of kapha tiri dishra kripa sindhu dhe vacha pakita nam bhavana yo vashna Everybody take a look at Krishna and Balaram. Note what's right there next to Balaram. And keep keen attention throughout the class for the name Sunanda. So, taking these verses one by one, this opening verse, text 26, the joyous occasion it describes of the marriage. We have a lot of weddings coming up in the month of April here in Alachua by different members of the community. And it's not really considered a joyous wedding unless there's a lot of guests. I mean, okay, you get married, you have one or two people. Sometimes you see circumstantially somebody will have a civil wedding and they go to the city hall and they have one or two people there, a couple of witnesses, you know, sign off. Okay, that's good. But it's really a wonderful occasion when you've got 400 or 500 guests. You know, it's a lot of organizing and managing, but it's a wonderful occasion. The more guests, the better the wedding, because the more blessings on the couple. So this section of the Bhagavatam is dealing with this subject of a marriage, and the marriage is being overseen by Lord Krishna. Interesting, at this particular section of the Bhagavatam, Krishna's kind of manifesting the role of a henpecked husband. There are many jokes in comical society about henpecked husbands who are controlled by their wives and, you know, this thing and that thing, and I could do some good any young man jokes here and get myself in trouble, but we'll avoid that subject. We'll stick with what the Bhagavatam has to offer today. So Lord Krishna shows that the behavior of such a husband is that the wife thinks that he's very devoted to her. And we see that this was the occasion with all of the different wives. Here we're predominantly dealing with Rukmini. But Krishna had 16,108 wives at this point in time. And they all were convinced that Krishna never left their palace. That Krishna's always with me. That Krishna's always attentive to what I need done. He's always here with the family. He's always in my palace. The other queens don't get it. They all thought that. And rightfully so, because it was true. Krishna was in all 16,100 palaces all the time. So each wife in this way believed that she had full control over her husband and he was very devoted to her. And, you know, in this way, he actually brought each of the wives under his control by apparently submitting to them in this way, so that they were very attached to him and, as a result, very submissive to what he has to say. Yet, in married life, this is somewhat of a ruse because there is no genuine dominance of a husband over the wife or the wife over the husband. If it's a happy relationship, there's a very mutual effort. And we see this from this last chapter, the joking between Rukmini and Lord Krishna. It's very a give and take relationship back and forth like that. So this is the circumstance of that. And then the household life, as we mentioned, is made so much sweeter by so many relatives and family members and friends and guests. And so we see that all of this is very factual in everyday life. You have a wedding, you have a lot of guests come. Trust me, I know. My son's wedding is coming up and my entire family is coming down. Not only my immediate family of my kids, but all of my family from my side. So you've got all these people coming in and all these arrangements to be made. And it's a very joyous, wonderful activity. So one may hear these things, and rightly so, one might question, Parikshit Maharaj is sitting on the banks of the river getting ready to leave this world, preparing himself to fix his consciousness in the Supreme. Why is Sukadeva Goswami describing a wedding to him? Wedding talks about, you know, husband, wife, children, attachments, family members, social society, so on and so on. Why is Sukadeva Goswami explaining such a thing? You know, it's a long list. The beginning of this chapter is a whole long list of names. And this one married that one, and we got this many children, and their names were this, and they begot that many children and married to that one. So it's just a whole collection of a who's who of society. So, you know, we might be curious as we sit in the Bhagavatam class to understand why it's just being spoken about. What to speak of, in general, sannyasis and renunciates are not even supposed to attend weddings and family functions like this, except just to give a little blessing and then depart. So there's a very clear explanation, which we all know being devotees, that these activities are all related to Lord Krishna, that they are Lord Krishna's family members, that they are Lord Krishna's loved ones, that they are the children of Lord Krishna. And therefore, anything related to the topics of Lord Krishna reminds one of the pastimes of the Lord, and remembering the pastimes of the Lord in any form purifies the consciousness, purifies the heart, and thus one becomes nicely situated. So this is why Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj are hearing and chanting about apparently just mundane society events like a wedding, because it's related to the supreme, sublime activities of Lord Krishna, which will certainly elevate us. Now, text 27 and 28. I have to say, I love this story. This is one of my all-time favorite stories from when I was a brahmachari. You know, it has all the makings of a classic story. It's got a wedding. It's got family members that maybe like to partake of the festivities a little bit too much. It's got ill advice from a foolish group of relatives with hidden grudges. And ultimately, it's got bad advice about gambling games. So it's got all the makings of a great story. Everything right there related to the Lord's pastime. So there's nothing not to like about this particular story of the wedding here. Now, you know, we should state right up front with all humility, Lord Balaram's not really good at playing dice. It's not his expertise. He likes to play dice a lot, but he's not so good at it, and it's kind of an unfortunately well-known fact. So, but what Balaram is very good at is carrying a club, a very beautiful, golden, shiny, large club, which you see right there at his lotus side. And so we see that, you know, for the devotee, they see this club, at least I know myself, I see this club and I think, ah, I'm protected. Nothing can go wrong. My Lord has a large club to keep away all the demons and the bad influences, the horrible thoughts in my mind. My Lord has this club. But for envious persons, it should be a warning. They should think, whoa, this guy's got a big club. I better be careful around him. But unfortunately, we see that the king of Kalinga and his associates don't have that particular mindset. The king of Kalinga, I like to refer to him as a double coward. A double coward because, first of all, he is he's too chicken, as they might say in modern terminology, to face Lord Balaram directly. He knows Lord Balaram's very powerful. He knows Lord Balaram's got that club, so he doesn't approach Lord Balaram directly. And he's such a coward, he sends his buddy. Okay, Rukmi, you can do this. Go. No, you can do it. It's all right, go ahead. So he encourages him. He says, you know, this Balaram, he's not very good at dice, but he likes to play dice. You're really good. Go challenge him in a game. This will be a really good idea. Now, usually, when a cowardly friend says to you, oh, this is a really good idea, it's probably not. As is the case here with the king of Kalinga, he's encouraging Rukmi. that you should challenge Balaram to this gambling match. This will be a really good idea. Now, Rukmi is either blind or foolish or driven by false ego or all the above. He doesn't notice that Balaram's got this big club, and he notices that, King of Klinga's right. I'll challenge Balaram to a match. So he agrees to play dice with him. Now, I've had the good fortune on two occasions to see dice games played in this manner. One time when I was in Vrindavan walking from the Arungiji temple back towards Krishna Balaram, I came across a section and there was a group of men. And this dice game that we may be thinking from what we know with modern dice is not quite the same. It's laid out like a plus sign, like a math plus sign. And you have four players on each end and they roll the dice. And they're not like little square dice. They're a little bit long, almost like mahjong sticks, but thinner than that. And they roll them and then they move accordingly like that. So I saw these Brijbasi men playing it. And they were having just a great time and it was very entertaining to watch. But more fun for me was the time I saw Radharamanji playing dice. What? Radharamanji playing dice, you ask? Yes, the way it works is that they go before Radharamanji, two pujaris, and they lay the dice game out in front of the deity on the ground, and one pujari sits on one side and takes the position of Radharaman, and the other pujari sits on the other side and takes the position of Radharani, and they play dice. As they get ready to roll, they indicate the dice and indicate to the deity they're rolling on behalf of, and then make the move, here, and accordingly. And then the other pujari, Radharamanji, so like this, and this goes on for quite some time. There's some photographs from Kartik a couple of years ago of the pujaris doing this. We're all standing there watching it. Very, very entertaining, very nice to see. So a dice game can be a lot of fun to watch like that. Unfortunately, this dice game was not quite so much fun. Now, text 29. We see that this dice game was not about a couple of paisa. Okay, here's, a handful of rupees. Tell me if you can guess what's in, my right hand, my left hand, whatever. No. This was a game being played by very well-to-do, very wealthy, very prominent kshatriyas who were men of good means. So first, 100 gold coins. Gauranga, you have 100 gold coins in your pocket? You have one gold coin in your pocket? No, no gold coins. So 100 gold coins. So that game was lost. Then the second game, the rematch, 1,000 gold coins. Anybody have 1,000 gold coins? You better hide them because I'm going to come get them. And then after that, a rematch, 10,000 gold coins. Now, we should understand, sometimes in gambling scenarios, there'll be what you might call an empty wager. Okay, well, here's a piece of paper. I'll pay you next Tuesday on that. Let's play the game today, and then you can come collect it next Tuesday. These were not empty wagers. These were people that actually had the gold coins. So you're talking about quite a pile of gold coins building up here. This isn't just like, okay, well, we'll see if we can get this together. Now the king of Kalinga... Here again, as I mentioned, he shows his foolishness and his cowardliness. And when Lord Balaram loses these first three matches, the king of Kalinga laughs. And he doesn't just laugh. He laughs from behind his dupe, if you will, Rukmi. So he's put Rukmi ahead again, and then behind him he begins just laughing. And this is a really important point, so pay attention to this. When he laughs, he shows his teeth. Like that. Sometimes you laugh. Actually, there's different types of laughter, which I'll describe here. There's a light chuckle, which is called the etiquette laughter. Like that. And then there's the more animated but nonverbal silent laughter. Now, those of you just listening over the internet, you're missing all the fun. And then there's the notably louder, or what's called the snorting laughter. Like that. And then there's the last kind, the most notably louder and very verbal laughter called the belly laugh. And it's usually accompanied by showing of the teeth. This is what the king of Kalinga was doing. Every time Balaram would lose, he'd do a big belly laugh, show his teeth, open his big mouth up. And let's just say that Lord Balaram didn't find this very amusing at all. You're all sitting here chuckling at my examples of laughing. Lord Balaram was not chuckling. He wasn't belly laughing. He wasn't entertained in any way, shape, or form by this activity of the king. So text number 30. Now, things really get interesting. Rukmi bets 100,000 gold coins. For you kids that are expert in math, that's six figures with a comma in the middle. 100,000 gold coins. Now, they have a song which most of you won't know. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck if you've ever been a lady to begin with. Luck be my lady tonight. So it turns out this is what happened. Lord Balaram wins the hand. I mean, luck actually turned on his side, you might say. And so he wins. But Rukmi begins to show his true colors for the rascal that he is. And he starts cheating. And why is he cheating? Because he fears the loss of 111,100 gold coins. Because that's all the amounts together. The 100, the 1,000, the 10,000, and the 100,000. So 111,100 gold coins is at risk here. So Rupi's not going to take this easily. He begins to cheat. And in his cheating, he says, no. I actually won. This step right here is the beginning of Rukmi's undoing. This is what really is his fatal flaw, you might say. So we move to text 31. Shaking with anger like the ocean on a full moon day, handsome Lord Balaram, his natural reddish eyes even redder in fury, accepted the wager of 100 million gold coins. 100 million gold coins. I didn't even bother to write down what that totals up to be. It was such a large number. So here we see the secret to a game of gambling. If you're ever in a berth as a Kshatriya and have to take part in gambling, or find yourself in a card game for whatever reason, the secret, everybody knows, is to appear to be emotionless. Oh, you're going to miss all the fun now. All right, sorry. You'll hear about it later. Read the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the secret to winning in gambling, in a game of cards or whatever the type of gambling, is to appear emotionless. To not indicate great joy when you've got a good hand, or great disappointment when you've got a bad hand. So this is a real advantage in this type of activity. What Kshatriyas take part in, not Brahmins. Unfortunately, Balaram's not real good at this either. He shows his anger. And his anger, we have to say in fairness, is multiplied not only by losing, but by being cheated on and by being laughed at. I mean, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Balaram. He carries a club. This is not a guy that you want to laugh at. King of Kalinga and Rukmi just don't get it. And so they continue with this. And, you know, it just doesn't satisfy anybody in this regard. Now, you know, I apologize to Lord Balaram for any offenses may perceive. I'm just telling the story as the Srimad Bhagavatam tells it. You know, so finally, Lord Balaram wages 100 million gold coins. Actually, I did put this out. So it's 100,111,100 gold coins. That's the total wager at risk here. So As we said, Lady Luck favors Lord Balaram again, and he wins the hand of dice. The 100,111,100 gold coins are now his. He's won them all. Lord Balaram Ki Jai! So, he fairly won it, no cheating involved. But as we see in verse 32, Rukmi again resorts to cheating and declares, No, I have won this match. This is mine. So he says, if you don't believe me, just ask the witnesses. And in turn, he points to the king of Kalinga and all of his cronies. Now, you know, if you're cheating, you're certainly not going to go before the jury of impartial peers. You're going to go before a stacked deck. So this is what he does. He turns to all of his associates who have supported him through this entire ridiculous scenario, which is only going to bring about trouble for him. He says, just ask the witnesses. They saw. And even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that, you know, really? That's your witness? So in this way, he tries to somehow or another continue the game to his favor in this cheating manner. As the verse says to the purport, however, something very wonderful happens. What is that something very wonderful that happens? A voice from the sky declares, Balaram has fairly won this wager. Rukmi is a liar. That's pretty phenomenal. Now, I have to admit, when I read this, I was a bit disappointed. Sukadev Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Sridhar Swami, none of them have taken effort to identify this voice from the sky. You know, sometimes they do like that, you know, in the purport. Now, we do know from previous experience that voice is usually Narada Muni. Because Narada really likes to churn things up. You know, whenever there's an unembodied voice moving things forward, a lot of times it turns out to be Narada Muni because he likes a little action, you know. So somebody, we don't know who, declares that Balaram is actually the winner and Rukmi's a liar, a cheater, and a no-good scoundrel. That's what they might have said in the West. So at any rate, we move on to verse 34 here. Urged on by the wicked kings, Rukmi ignored the divine voice. In fact, destiny itself was urging Rukmi on as he ridiculed Lord Balaram. Rukmi has already shown great foolishness throughout this endeavor. Now he shows his stupidity, just plain stupidity. He ignores the divine voice and he takes the encouragement from his knucklehead friends who have nothing good to offer for his benefit. Your friends, your buddies, are the ones that, as they say, are supposed to have your back. They take care of you. They make sure you're protected. These are certainly not friends. They do not have his best interest in mind while this is going on. So then, just to, as they say, put the icing on the cake, he's baked this wonderful cake of offenses and insults. And so he ices it up real good with the following insult to Lord Balaram. You cowherds, and you can just see him in a condescending manner. You can picture this in your mind. You cowherds who wander about the forest, you know nothing of playing dice. Playing dice is a sport, just like arrows, to be sought after by kings. It's not for the likes of people like you. Not only is this condescending, it's completely wrong. How is it that Rukmi could be, or anybody could be, so foolish to assume that Lord Balaram, the supreme personality of Godhead, non-different than Krishna except in bodily hue, is an ordinary cowherd man? He's obviously unaware that Lord Balaram is the source of all the different Vishnus. He's the source of all the created elements in this universe. He empowers the actions of all living entities by acting as the supersoul in their hearts. And he supports the entire cosmic creation on his hoods in his form as Seshananta. But yet, Rukmi's going to refer to him as just some cowherd boy who doesn't know how to play dice. So this is pretty much the end. Text number 36. Thus insulted by Rukmi and ridiculed by the kings, Lord Balaram was provoked to anger. In the midst of the auspicious wedding assembly, he He raised his club and struck Rukmi dead. Yes, pretty bold. Rukmi finally gets it. The only thing that Rukmi might have been able to add to his insult would have been to turn around and do what we modernly would say. So he's practically done all of that. So Balaram has been a little bit angry up to this point. He's really been, you know, and he's been showing it, but this is his nature. So the ever-present club, who knows the name of the club? Anybody? You know the name of the club? Yes. Huh? Close. Somebody listen. Sunanda. Sunanda is the name of the club. Now, the Sunanda Club's most prominent role that we know of in Krishna and Balaram's pastimes is Vidvita Gorilla. But at any rate, so Balaram makes his presence known with Sunanda in his hand. It's a huge club. Now, if you've got a big club in your hand and you're angry, it's not too hard to figure out what's going to happen. Somebody's not going to come out of this too well. And that would be Rukmi. One single blow. Into the game. It's all over. It's all it took. Rukmi was done with one single blow from the Sunanda Club of Lord Balaram. Now, this is a wedding. We've got a nice wedding going on. Everybody's having a good time, right? And there's a little dice came, and all of a sudden a club comes out, somebody gets killed. There's a big fight. Not so uncommon. Some of you may know that in a Russian wedding, it's not considered a wedding unless on the second day there's a good fight. Yeah, and also in some Italian weddings, it's considered an auspicious thing. There's a good fight between the families at the wedding. So not so uncommon that this might happen. But here we see that the fight in the middle of this wedding is taking place now. Now, in text 37, the king of Kalinga pretty much realizes the gig's up, as they say. His front man, Rukmi, is finished. And he realizes that Balaram's aiming for him next, as they might say. So he had laughed at Lord Balaram and shown his teeth. And when everything started falling apart, he tried to run away. But it mentions Lord Balaram seized him on the 10th step. Now, the king of Kalinga, you know, let's examine his better qualities in this event. Cheating, lying, conniving, and, oh, he's a coward too. He's running for his life. Actually, being a coward is the only smart thing he's done. He realizes Balaram's after him with his club, so he runs. But, as it says, Balaram got him without any delay at all. Now, there's some significance to the fact that the king of Kalinga gets 10 steps. You know, maybe Balaram gave him a little head start. All right, you know, I'm going to count to three and you see how far you can get. You know, sometimes kids play that game or, you have 60 seconds to get out of here and then I'll see if I can catch you. Whatever the case, he gets a little bit of a head start and on the 10th step, Balaram catches him. And Balaram does with his club properly award the most physical feature that the king of Kalinga has been displaying. His teeth. He's been very proud of these teeth. You know, maybe he had good dental work done on him when he was a kid by the likes of Gaur Shakti's ancestors. And they were very, very fine teeth, and he liked to show them. But Balaram took care of it. And it doesn't mention that Balaram took his club and knocked out a tooth. You know, sometimes you fall off the swing set or you get into a fight with somebody, they punch you and you lose a tooth. It doesn't mention he knocked out a tooth. It doesn't mention he knocked out all his front teeth. It mentions he knocked out all 32 teeth. They're gone. No teeth. All of them. Finished. So in this way, the king of Kalinga's ability to show his pearly whites is completely finished. So text 38. Tormented by Lord Balaram's club, the other kings fled in fear, their arms, thighs, and heads broken, and their bodies drenched in blood. Now, the king of Kalinga was not alone. Remember, he had his associates, and they were all supporting Rukmi, and they were the same supporters that stood forward and witnessed, oh, yeah, Rukmi, he isn't cheating. He really did win these hands. So Lord Balaram now starts to finish him off one by one. Boom, 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 boom. Broken heads, thighs, arms, blood everywhere. It's going this way and that way. So this is a little bit of an extreme dice game. That's true. But we should actually see what's going on here. And we might just think, it's a dice game. Balaram got a little excited and knocked everybody around. But this is actually strictly according to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. In the fourth chapter, Paritranaya Sadhunam, Vinasaya Chaduskritam, Dharma Samstarpanantaya, Sambhavam Chikajike. In order to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram come to this world at this time specifically to get rid of the overbearing, unnecessary demoniac kings, of which this crew, Rukmi and the king of Kalinga and the rest of them, all fit into that category. So this is actually their purpose in adventing, to do away with these type of rascals. So there's really no wrongdoing here. This is just an entertaining way in which they've decided to get rid of this crew. The battle of Kurukshetra was the way they got rid of some others. There's the removal of Shishupal's head with the Sudarshan Chakra was one way. So there's a variety of ways. It's not that they were all done in the same manner. Krishna and Balaram came to get rid of the miscreant kings. This is one of the ways in which they're doing it at this scenario here. And then we go to text 39. This is an important text. When his brother-in-law Rukmi was slain, Lord Krishna neither applauded nor protested, O king, for he feared jeopardizing his affectionate ties with either Rukmini or with Balaram. The classic example of the married man caught in the middle. You're going to get your wife upset with you, or you're going to get your brother upset with you. You can't win either way. You know, if you side with one or the other, it's not going to be very nice family dealing. So Lord Krishna does not say anything. He simply remains silent. This is an example of how the Lord again appears in the role of a so-called ordinary man. Do any of us really think that Krishna would not be able to accomplish both of those? Actually, one of Krishna's names is Chaturatva, and it means one who can do many things at the same time. It's one of the meanings of that. So Krishna couldn't pacify Rukmini and pacify Balaram at the same time? Of course he could. But for the sake of this Leela, for the sake of this role he has assumed here, for the sake of this pastime with Lord Balaram, he simply remains silent. And so Lord Balaram is executing his activities according to the desires of his own Leela as well. And Krishna doesn't want to interfere with that Leela of Lord Balaram, so he gives him that freedom. And then we go to our last verse of the day. Then the descendants of Dasara, headed by Lord Balaram, seated Aniruddha and his bride on a fine chariot and sent them off from Bojita to Dwarka. Having taken shelter of Lord Madhusudana, they had fulfilled all their purposes. Now, this final verse approaches the entire incident almost with that's done. Let's get back to the wedding. I mean, there's really nobody upset about this. Tamahar mentioned this nicely in yesterday's class, that there was a natural animosity, I don't know about natural, but a long-standing animosity between Rukmi and Krishna and Balaram, and actually the entire family of Krishna and Balaram. So nobody was very much upset about the fact that Rukmi and the king of Kalinga are finished and done away with. All the like-minded persons of their nature were all killed by Lord Balaram, and that was pretty much satisfactory to anybody, and the wedding just went on, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, we can remember when Krishna, I mentioned Shishupal earlier, that when Krishna was approached by Shishupal's mother, she said, please forgive my son 100 times. Forgive my son, don't ever kill me. So Krishna said, I'll forgive him 100 times. Well, Shishupal just barged right in and insulted Krishna 100 plus 1. So Krishna counted 98, 99, 100. Okay, that's it. Sudarshan Chakra, and off goes Shishupal's head. So in the same way, Rukmi just barges right on through. I mean, it should be obvious at some point in this that this is not bidding well for him. But he just continues to push on forward, just continues to push on forward like this. So, you know, what is it Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in the purport here? That hardly anyone lamented Rukmi's demise. So there was no concern, and the wedding resumes. Now, by the statement that the wedding resumes, this means that they now perform the final step in the Vivaha Samskara. Some of you may know that there is one final step in a wedding. It's called the Yana Rohana. The Yana Rohana, or the mounting of the vehicle. The husband offers his hand to assist the bride and indicates the golden chariot with fine wheels like the sun and places the bride on that chariot. And then he addresses the bride, "O effulgent woman, mount this golden chariot, which is well made and has fine wheels and contains the entire universe and is the source of immortality and as bright as the sun. May it carry you to your husband's home." This is the final step of any wedding ceremony. We've done sometimes had the opportunity to do this, not with a golden chariot, but with a nice clean car. Maybe some tin cans tied to the back. So in this way, Aniruddha and his bride get on the chariot, and then the entire family takes off from Bhojagupta to Dwarka. Now, I did a little bit of investigation about how long was this from one place to the other. There's two Bhojagupta's mentioned. One is in Bihar near Patna. But if we read the verses here, this is talking about the Vidyadagaha state in Maharashtra. So Bhojagupta mentioned here is in the far eastern state of Maharashtra, almost near Hyderabad. So they go from there to Dwarka, which is in Gujarat, by chariot. So if you drive from one to the other nowadays in a car, they say it takes about 16 hours. So let's say the chariot, you know, has four good solid horses. So let's give it a day, day and a half of travel time. This gives new meaning to the word fine chariot, because you've got to have some comfort if you're going to travel a day and a half in a chariot ride. Right? I'm sure they stopped at a few rest stops along the way, you know, a couple of rotis, some paratas, you know, like that, whatever. But, you know, they had about a day and a half of travel time from one place to the other. So this is about the distance between the two places being mentioned in this particular story, in this pastime here. So, a bit of a journey. That finishes that chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, I mentioned about Lord Balaram's prominence in this, and there's a reason Lord Balaram had such a prominent role throughout these activities. Because when Lord Balaram was incarnated as Lakshman with Ramchandra, he was the junior brother. And every event that took place, Ram would put him in place because Lakshman had a different idea. Time to be banished to the forest. No, Lakshman didn't want to go. He wanted to stand up and contest this. Ram quieted him. Lakshman wanted to kill this demon or that demon. Ram quieted him. Lakshman had a discussion. Ram quieted him. So he took a vow. Lakshman took a vow. I will never again incarnate as the junior brother. So the next incarnation was Krishna and Balaram. And Balaram was the senior brother. And he took a bit more prominent place. He had a club and he started killing demons. Palambasura, Dvidvita Gorilla, Rukmi, the king of Kalinga, like that. So it took this prominent place. Now, the next incarnation, of course, would have been as Lord Chaitanya and Lord Inanda, where he took an even more senior position. Now, we can't mention Chaitanya and not at least give some time in today's class to Govinda Ghosh Thakur, whose disappearance day we're celebrating today. When Mahaprabhu ordered Nityananda to leave Puri and go back to Bengal and preach, he sent three devotees with him, Ram Das, Madhava Ghosh, and Vasudev Ghosh. Interestingly, absent from that was the third brother, Govinda Ghosh. Govinda Ghosh stayed in Jagannath Puri with the Lord and assisted him and served him. These three brothers, it mentions Vasudev Ghosh, Madhava Ghosh, and Govinda Ghosh, were especially the description given in Chaitanya Bhagavata is sweet-throated singers. Sweet-throated singers. Not a word you hear used to describe singers nowadays. Sweet-throated singers. Kind of like our Bali and Kishore, If they had a brother, it'd be like the three. Well, they kind of have a brother. His name's Vishwambar. He's not really a brother, but he is. So the three of them together, just how pleasant they sound when they sing together. So Vasudeva Madhava and Govinda Ghosh like this. Now, it's mentioned that when they sang, the Ghosh brothers, not Bali and Vasudeva and Vishwambar, that when they sang, Inanda would dance during their kirtans wherever they were. Actually, I don't know, maybe Inanda dances during Bali, Kusha's, and Vishwambar's kirtans too, but I wouldn't see that. But these three brothers, they were very, very dear to Lord Inanda for their kirtan, and he would always dance whenever they did their kirtan like that. Their home was in a place called Srihatta. And it mentions that after their father passed away, that under the leadership of Vasudeva, who was the senior brother, the three of them all moved to Navadvip. And that in Navadvip, they were very active in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in one of his descriptions, mentions that in the Vrindavan Leela, of Krishna's Leela, they were very intimate gopis of Radharani. And Gaura Gonadesha Deepika describes them as having been the three gopis, Kalavati, Rasalasa, and Gunatunga Shaki. So these three brothers, following in the same footsteps of their Raja Leela and being very famous kirtan singers, they were always present during the Rath Yatra times when Lord Chaitanya would organize seven kirtan parties. They were always in those kirtan parties singing very, very nicely. Now, after Lord Chaitanya sent Vasudeva and Madhava back with Inanda, Govinda stayed with Mahaprabhu. And then after Mahaprabhu left Puri to go to Vrindavan, Govinda traveled with him. Now, one day, they were sitting in one particular village and taking prasadam. And after the prasadam, Lord Chaitanya asked them haritaki. Haritaki is a little like a mouth freshener, like some herbs after at the end of it you would take. And so Govinda had none, so he quickly ran into the nearby village and went to some householder's house and begged some and brought it back and gave it to the Lord very nicely. So they continued their traveling. The next day, after the meal, Lord Chaitanya asked for some haritaki. Govinda gave it right to him. Mahaprabhu quizzed him. He said, yesterday it took quite some time for you to get me the haritaki. Today you had it right there. How's that? He said, oh, well, I got a double amount yesterday. I saved it for you. Mahaprabhu said, oh. He said, well, since you have a good tendency to saving things, you should stay in this place and establish the worship of the deity of Gopinath. So Govinda was deputed to stay in this particular town there. Now, some days after that, Govinda was taking a bath in the Ganga, and some big floating object touched his back. So he pushed it over to the shore, off onto the side like that. And then that night he had a dream. And the dream indicated that that piece of wood that he thought was there that had touched him should be kept and handed over to Lord Chaitanya when Lord Chaitanya arrived. Well, he didn't know Lord Chaitanya was coming. And so the next morning, Lord Chaitanya came back to where he was and said to him, he said, you have nothing to worry about. This wood that you think is actually a piece of stone, and a sculptor will come within the next few days and carve the deity of Gopinath, and then you'll stay here and worship this deity of Gopinath. So this indeed happened. A divine sculptor came, and with his tools, he carved the deity of Gopinath. And Govinda was the pujari for this deity for quite some time. Now, after some time, Govinda married, and then he had a son. And after some time, the wife passed away, and then shortly after that, the son also passed away. Govinda was very grief-stricken. Why has the Lord done this to me? He's taken away not only my wife, but my son. So he lay down on his bed in a fit of anger and decided to fast. I'm not going to cook anything. I'm not going to eat anything, which means he didn't cook anything and offer anything to Gopinath. So Gopinath left the altar and came in and began to massage his legs. He said to him, I don't understand your intelligence, Govind. One of your sons dies and you decide to let the other one die also. Govinda said, I don't know what you're talking about. I only have one son. The deity said to him, am I not also your son? You're feeding me. You're taking care of me. Does that not make me your son? I'm dependent upon you. Now you've decided to neglect me altogether? Govinda said, oh, so you're my son also? It was my hope that my son would survive me and perform the necessary rituals after my passing away from this world on the Pinda. And are you going to do that? Are you going to serve me in that way? So the deity said, yes, I can do that. Why not? I hereby promise that I will celebrate your death anniversary in a very fitting manner every year. Now, can you please make me something to eat? Sometimes the exchanges between the Lord and his devotees in the deity form are very amazing, very unique, and very way beyond our level of understanding. So hearing this promise from the Lord, Gopinath was very happy. He got up and cooked a nice big prasad and offered it to Gopinath. Govinda got up and offered it to Gopinath like that. So in due course of time, Govinda did depart from this world. And when the cremation, when he departed, he left an instruction. He wasn't to be cremated, but was to be buried. So his tomb is there. And on that day, and on every anniversary after that, the deity is dressed all in white and has kusa grass placed in their hand for the performance of the Pinda ceremony of Govinda Ghosh Thakur. And if you go to that temple today, if you can get over there quick enough, they actually are doing the same thing. It goes on to this day. So one interesting side note, and we'll finish here because we've run a little bit over time, about his brother Vasudev. Vasudev also had a very interesting deity of Lord Chaitanya. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed from this world, Vasudev Ghosh decided, all right, that's it. I'm through. I'm not living anymore. He dug a big hole, and he climbed down to the bottom of it and said, I'm just going to sit here and fast until I die, and you just throw the dirt on top of me. That's it. So when he did like this, Lord Chaitanya came to him. And Lord Chaitanya said to him, please, come out of there. Come out of there. There's no need for you to behave like this. So there's a deity form that is worshipped to this day in the temple of Vasudev Ghosh, where the hand of Lord Chaitanya is up and one hand is like this. Come on, get up. It's a very unusual deity form. I'd like to see a picture of that if anybody's got one. So these are the Ghosh brothers, Vasudev, Madhava, and Govinda, and the pastimes of Lord Balaram with his ever-present club Sunanda. Thank you very much. Appreciate your tolerance of my going overtime. Hare Krishna. Of course, Shrimad Bhagavatam.